Hello and welcome back to the My Entertainment World podcast. We are back with another episode of the nominee interview series for you this year, featuring nominees for our 2024 Critics Pick Awards. Today's episode features an interview with the ensemble and director of 13 plays about ADHD all at the same time. And it's a, as the title would suggest, it's a chaotic group. It's a very fun conversation, but there's a lot of crosstalk, a lot of jokes. And we do wander off of topic, which I think it's like an immersive experience. So I think it really captures part of the play for you. Be sure to check out this, as well as there will be a print interview with the director, Alec Toller, also available on myentertainmentworld.ca. So definitely check them out. They work best in concert. And be sure to see the show when it makes its one night return at Toronto Sketchfest this March. So that's all for now. Be sure to check out everything that's going on the website, and I'll see you on the other side.
I'm Alec Toller. I got involved because I came up with the idea, and then I contacted myself, and I was free, barely. So I'm the writer-director, and I conned all these fools into joining.
Just jump in, whoever. Chloe, you're next.
Okay. I'm Chloe Sullivan. I'm a performer in the show. And I got the incredible opportunity to do this because Alec Toller emailed me out of the blue. The title of his email was "A Very Terrible Opportunity." And I read it and I thought, that's not true. So I said yes, because I was also free. And it was a joy.
Jillian?
Jillian Welsh. I'm also a performer in the play, and I got involved in this because Alec also sent me an email that said a very terrible offer. I think I was like a last minute throw in, but very grateful to get thrown in. Yeah.
You weren't a last minute throw in, but...
Okay. Sorry, you were just vibing with the ADHD vibes. And we're like, ooh, yeah.
Ooh. And John.
I'm John Blair. I'm also a performer in the show. I've been friends with Alec for a while. He's been telling me about this project for a bit, but I'm a little confused because I got an email titled "Throwing You a Bone." Say yes to this, or I don't know what you're doing. So I don't know. I guess it wasn't like a form letter, I was like, sure. I guess I better.
Yeah, there's a lot of threats in the wind, John.
The tone was very, very different. Yeah,
I was catering the caliber of the offer to the performer.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah.
So, and yeah. We've just been joined by Daniel Padgett. So we're going around and introducing ourselves so that everybody recognizes our voice on the audio recording. Can you tell us who you are and how you got involved with the project?
This is my real voice. I'm Danny, and I'm Danny Padgett. I got involved in this project because Alec, I'd stepped away for like 5 years, and Alec was like, hey, I have this play that's about ADHD. I would like you to help me with it in any way possible. And I was like, yeah, like maybe I'll help with writing or something like that, something a little bit more hands off. And then he was like, also, I kind of wrote this role with you in mind. And I made him give me a deadline, because without a deadline, I would have just hemmed and hawed over it forever. And then eventually I was like, oh, this actually ticks all my boxes for coming back to the theater. And so I was like, I guess I'll do a play with one of my best friends in the world. Ew.
Something regretted it. Yeah.
So the marketing material for 13 Plays mentions a large percentage of the team has ADHD. Does anyone want to talk about how that diagnosis came into play in the production process?
Frequently and unfortunately.
One time I showed up at Jill's apartment, and just by sheer luck, she was coming downstairs to leave the building to go to where the rehearsal actually was. And I looked at her and she looked at me, and we both had that moment of, am I in the right place at the same time? And thankfully, she'd already ordered an Uber. So I just got in her Uber and got to the rehearsal on time. But otherwise, I would have just been happily, doom scrolling away in her lobby for who knows how long. So.
I think part of our marketing material at one point, one of our posts was just our text thread, which was just a constant stream of, sorry, I'm going to be late. Oh, I went to the wrong place. Oh, I didn't know we had rehearsal today. I was a dumb dumb.
Jill, can I out you?
Oh, yeah, which
Yeah,
one?
yeah, yeah.
On the very first rehearsal,
Oh, yeah.
no, yeah, the very first rehearsal, I get a call, and I'm at home, and Jill's like, I'm here, and I'm like, where's that? And she's like, at the rehearsal place, the Alpine. And I'm like, I'm not. Why are you there? And she's like, oh shit, it's supposed to be Sunday, not Saturday. So you were 24 hours early, which
Yeah.
is great because then you had this like you banked 24 hours of earliness that you could sort of make a withdrawal from every subsequent
That's
rehearsal.
the way to do it. You build up
Yeah.
your credit.
Oh
Your
yeah.
credit score.
Yeah.
And I think like rehearsals themselves, if you can imagine, often got derailed with long jokes developing into entire narratives, developing into what are we doing again? Oh, right, that play. And having to like like including the director, we had to all like work together to get ourselves back on focus.
It's a sorry state when I am the one who has to be the focus captain. It's
The
not my forte, unsurprisingly,
reason.
but I was like, guys, come on, we have to rehearse and not just do jokes. Now,
But
let's
then one
do the
more
scripted
add to the joke.
jokes. Yeah, exactly.
Then you'd add, yeah. Very fun.
So all of your characters are named after yourselves. Are you playing sort of real versions of yourselves, or how accurate are those portraits, or are they inventions who share your name?
They are 100% accurate. I will take no further
Absolutely.
follow-up.
It is a theater documentary. It's a weird format. I think there's aspects of all of us in our characters. But like I think it's also just sort of like a pretense of the play that like if you did this with other actors, you would use just their names, right? Like it's just sort of one of the conceits of the play is that these are the performers doing it. I feel like I have so much glare happening on my screen. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, you have no eyes.
Yeah,
They're
what?
gonna
I look like an anime villain.
they're gonna hear that glare on the
Yeah. What the fuck was I just talking about?
It's an immersive podcast. You were talking about how accurate the portrayals of the characters are versus your real lives.
Yeah, I mean, sort of tied into what you were saying, with the last question, so much of our experiences with ADHD or ADHD adjacent things are brought into the storytelling of the play. Some of the more like meta parts of the play, where when we do like the game show stories from our life, that like it yeah, it all just becomes intertwined into the narrative of it. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I don't know.
Personally, I found the fact that for my like as for my character sort of specifically, Alec had mentioned how I'm this like scene stealer or this someone who walks in and thinks that they know better than everyone else. And I found that really offensive because that's not in my nature at all.
Jesus
But no,
Christ.
even like taking a break recently from theater and doing work on resentments and character defects, it was almost like he was tracking that and he knew that that was a quality I possessed. So it was so perfect. But then even in like the ways we could play those, Jill and Shargel have a romantic narrative throughout, and that's not based on real life, but there were moments of enormity, and then we were also encouraged to find moments of stillness and realness. And that, for me personally, was the time to really just draw on myself, just drop it all, and like, what's Chloe going to do in this scenario as this play like falls apart, in those manufactured moments. So drawing on these very real diagnoses and then also elements of yourselves in the characters, was there a vulnerability to that? And how did you approach handling that vulnerability? And was there ever anything that felt a little too close to home and ended up not making it in?
There was to answer the last part of the question, I remember is it in the sh yeah, there's one fuck up I had in the game show where I was like, oh, it's like therapy session, like Alec was late for the therapy session. It's like, okay, like, oh, as a therapist. And the truth is, I did it twice with the same person. They later fired me, unsurprisingly. And I remember being like, do I include this when I know both of my supervisors will be at this play at some point? But I did keep it in because I feel like that's the spirit of the show, is to hang everything out there. I felt vulnerable throughout in like, yes, it is a more personal work, and I tried very hard to make sure there was a heart in it. And it's only really when, I mean, there's some validation of that once the cast read it and reacted to it. That only really resonates with me truly once I had the audience respond to it. Because I was sort of worried that it would be too just pure nonsense, silly chaos. But thankfully, somehow we threaded the needle of that. And then otherwise, I don't know. I feel like maybe this will be the my reckoning here, but I feel like otherwise, and in like inviting the cast to like offer stories and stuff, it was mostly like you can offer stuff if you want. If you want to throw a true story in the game show or whatever, pit of shame, go for it. But like no one was required to, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think like I know at least like from my perspective, like I don't think that there's anything that there is quite a bit of us just being like, all right, this is crazy embarrassing, but I'm gonna say it. I love that aspect of the show. I love doing the game show part, and but also the shame pit part, where you get to, yeah, like just throw it all out there, like you were saying, Alec. Because the more honest we are, the better like juicier shit we get from the audience too. There's an aspect of earning their trust when once we get to like the shame pit part and we start asking them for stories where like it's always like a bit of a snowball effect, where like everybody's a bit nervous to do it, and then one person shares something, and usually the first one, even from the audience, is like the wildest one, and everyone's like, oh, okay, well then I can say that I forgot my keys the other day, like it's like you
Well,
forgot
the forgot the keys guy was the guy who worked at like some, I won't give too many details, but like worked at a facility such that it was important for security, so it caused a national security incident, which he then realized he had his cars like in his van or something, or his keys, sorry, his van. So like that was, I think, actually our very first suggestion on the very first night. I was like, okay, cool. People
That was
are
the first like
opening.
of all of them.
So you guys actually sort of answered my next question without prompting, which was about audience participation. So in
I know.
Alex's solo interview, he mentioned that Chartel had to be assigned the audience captain or something, with some rule to make sure you weren't too mean to them. What were some of the interactions, and why did that rule have to come into play?
When I as I originally wrote it, I really delight in tormenting people overall. It's why I became a therapist. I'm happy to go to therapy, so this is true to that. Anyway, but I can't remember all the specifics, but it basically was like we were part of the game to me when like we bring them up to play the like business associate whose code name was Jorp for some reason. But like when they read out Dorp, we had like they're on stage forever. And we were usually a little more aggressive, borderline abusive in the script. And Charles was like, you gotta, if you're getting someone in, you gotta help them out. And I was like, fine, you're right. Okay. So he was pretty good at being like, okay, so they did this, that, you know, we can make fun of them here, but then we got to, like, you know, give them their little, their sort of moment in the sun kind of thing. In fact, I think that was a big part of, at some point, audience member Jorp, like, they flipped the chart, so they read the next step, which, like, helps them get through a thing, so they could sort of be a hero for a moment rather than just a punching bag. So it was important that Chargel restrained me.
With such a unique structure, can you talk about the rehearsal process? Was it a linear thing, or did you break it down into pieces and then assemble after the fact?
I'm seeing a mouth open there, John.
I was just gonna say, yeah, we a lot of the time we really kind of hopped around. We worked on segments sort of you know, I think kind of in the order that they were ready to be worked on a lot of the time. Sometimes that had to do with like what materials we had on hand or things like that, or like what just ideas were most top of mind. And that was very fun because every time we were working on a separate little chunk of this, we'd come up with, you know, come up with new bits or come up with things that are fun about it. And then once we start to click them all together, it was sort of like, oh, remember how in this segment we came up with this little bit about that? We could take a little bit of that and tie that over here. And then like you started to really see like the sails kind of come together as we were sort of connecting all these bits that we, because we didn't really start from the, I think, beginning and go like, okay, now it's part two, now it's part three, now it's part four. It was sort of a like Alec was very wise in saying like we'd better start working on the dance number early and often and not leave that to the last minute, because that might take some of us. It's good.
John,
I think we
what are
had
you
a
talking
good
about?
sort
Jill
of
did great.
priority order, and then of course, and then of course, things like some things like the ending, like we're still finding as we're going, so we're like sort of like, oh, okay, like once we know a little bit more about, you know, the physical tropes and the sort of comedic languages we're establishing, then we can sort of put that together. But yeah, it was a real sort of I don't want to say like, no, I'll say nonlinear. That's fine. What's wrong with that? It was
Yeah,
nonlinear.
very offensive.
Be
Very,
brave,
very
John.
offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say
Even I
nonlinear.
think the title cards, which are really like to come before each segment, that was done on one of the last days. Like it was
Oh
just like
yeah,
we were
yes.
like scrambling to be like, okay, wait, and then it has to be a blank one here, and then
Right,
the
yep.
next one reads step four. Like it was great though to finally see it as all one cohesive piece and to have it
Yeah.
just like, you know, seem to the audience to be so especially with Danny's character having his eventual sort of meltdown. We were tracing that all the way through as a big connecting vein. Yeah.
It is
Yeah. And
crazy to.
every, oh, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Every character has their own little like thread and sort of meltdown in some way. So that was like narrative tissue through it. But there was also this, especially with the three sort of non-hosts, like the three performers, Chloe, Jill, and John, that there was like this chorus quality kind of thing that they were sort of intruding whenever. And a lot of those. That we have were in the original script in some form, although lots of the lines changed. But like just putting it all together and figuring out like where else can they kind of be there and in the way and popping up, because it that was so like I wanted the feeling that like if like the curtains were sort of going to like explode with these three actors and maybe others sort of coming forth. So like finding, as John said, like the tropes and stuff,
Yeah.
like the physical tropes we were using was sort of, you know. Important as we like built it together to sort of see what the whole thing actually looked like.
Danny, I hear you wrote the song at the end of the show. What can you tell us about that creation process?
I did write the song at the end of the show. As I was saying earlier, like I'd taken, you know, this hiatus from theater, and I also it had been 5 years since I'd been on stage, but it had been 12 years since I had written a song.
And also, I didn't know that at the
but like when I when I first met Alec, which was what, in like 2008, 2009.
Yeah, 2008. Yeah, yeah.
I At the time, I was working at a bar, and I was running an open mic, and so I would write these like little parody songs that I would pepper in through all the covers of Sweet Caroline that I was doing from the bar. It was just like a hobby of mine, but yeah, one of the first things that that we did when we hung out was like I played you, I think it was Good at Things. I don't know, one of my like parody songs.
I still remember the line. I'm really good at things, really good things. I can quote all three Lord of the
Three Lord of the
Rings. I'm
Rings.
really good at things.
Remember that time when Pippin sings, or maybe Mary th sings, "Man, I love Lord of the Rings." I almost remember all the lyrics to the song that I wrote, just like this song. But yeah, anyway, so I hadn't written a song in I guess then like 15 years or something like that. And Alec was like, "So yeah, like I want to end this with a song." And he was like, "Do you want to write that?" And in the spirit of like this, like say just saying yes to things and being like, "Yeah, I'll do that again. I'll do that again." I was like, "Sure, I'll write a fucking song for this."
The ending action says, Danny's line goes, "Oh, 13 plays, but she goes the musical." And the ending action line says, they do a musical number. We'll figure it out. Fuck you, blackout." And then the first
That's when
rehearsal,
I
I was like,
knew I
"Oh,
wanted to be in this."
that will be the Penguin
So
Publishing
wait,
version of this
you
play.
knew you wanted to be in it, Chloe. That means you knew you wanted to be in it when you got to the very last line.
Yes.
Well, I'd have to have a
Before
bang.
you're
I'd
like,
have to end out with a bang. Also, it's a challenge, right? I'm a very defiant person. Fuck you, fuck you. I'm in your play now.
Chloe reads a script like, "We'll see about that every page." All right, you got me, you son of a
Chloe enters. Does she? Okay.
bitch.
So yeah, I wrote that song. It was like it was what like maybe like halfway through the rehearsal process that like I think Alec, you reminded me. You were like, "How are things going with the song?" And I was like, "Things are not going with the song." But then like I had like a it, like in typical ADHD fashion, I cranked out that song in like 15 minutes or something like that. Like it was like we had a little Zoom meeting about lyrics, and I was like, "I've got sort of this idea of it," and I was chatting with Alec about it, and I think it was one of those things where like it was like we were going back and forth, and then I was like, "Oh, I think I have it." I was like, "I'm gonna hang up on you," and then yeah, like 15, 20 minutes later, I just like sent him the lyrics, and then I think I recorded that like demo version of the song, like that like voice note version of the song. And then it was just like a couple of little tweaks, and we worked out like just like how it was gonna work with everybody singing it.
It made me tear up the first time I heard it. I was like, "Oh yeah, he fucking got it."
Yeah, even the first time I played it for myself, I was just like, "Oh, found it."
You're like strumming. You're like, "I am really good at things." Ah.
Yeah, it was just like not unlike most nights in my room. It was just me weeping alone by myself in a with
Yeah,
a
weeping, playing by yourself with yourself.
guitar. Yeah, serenading myself into tears.
Did any of you have favorite moments in the show that you want to talk about?
No.
When we closed. No.
Was a very Statler
Thank you.
and Waldorf.
Well, this is not exactly the answer, or an answer to that question, but something that just occurred that I found unexpected was sometimes when we got to that pirate ship scene, I was dreading it slightly because there was a lot of prop involvement with that flip chart, and I have a perfectionist quality who really wants to get it right. So it wasn't always my favorite moment to approach, like the excitement for Daft Punk or that maze we have to labyrinth scene. But since the play, almost every single person that I know personally who saw it won't shut up about that pirate ship scene. It was our favorite part of the whole show, and I was like, I hated doing that.
Love your
Not
pirate
really,
theme.
Alex. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, what were some of the most interesting responses you heard to the play? Other than them liking all the things you didn't like.
My mom apologized for my childhood.
Wait, really? Elaborate.
My mom sent me a text after seeing this play saying, I'm so saying, I'm sorry, we didn't understand you better. I was like, Mom, you did great. You did your best. But I mean, like, that is an example of in general, the overwhelming reaction to the sort of like educational aspect of it, that I didn't expect. I don't know if any of us expected, where like a lot of people were like, I understand my partner better. I understand my kid better. I understand like members of my family better. There was this like, oh, we did the thing. We educated people through the magic of theater. Holy shit.
People understood themselves a lot better. That was the thing I kept hearing was, I didn't realize so many people understand this. I didn't realize that I'm not the only one who does this thing, blah, blah, blah.
Validating,
That
right?
was wonderful. Yeah. You're no longer alone, kind of
Yeah.
understanding.
Because I feel like when you get diagnosed with ADHD, and I was like recently diagnosed, I mean, had it my whole life, but recently diagnosed before this play. And sometimes you have that question of like, who am I? Like, what part of me is ADHD and what part is like actually the me part? And you can feel kind of alone because you're like, everybody's known that I'm this weirdo who doesn't quite fit the whole time. And I've been trying really hard to fit. And then getting to work with these folks, and even just like something as simple as all of us backstage, we can't sit still. So we're just pacing backstage, waiting for our time to go on, of just like, or if we're late, we can just say, sorry, I'm late, not like have to think of some sort of like elaborate excuse. And then on the flip side, having s it res like the audience responds so well with like, oh, that's me. It was just this like, I overall, from working on it to like meeting the audience, it was just this feeling of like less alone all across the board. Yeah.
I definitely feel like the experience of working with everybody and talking through so much of this stuff, it was, I think, very like enlightening, even just being involved in it. Like, I'm not diagnosed, and as I did, so when the things like the game show part and the like the chain pit part, I didn't contribute anything or put any stories in myself, because I felt like, well, well, not only because I'm not diagnosed, but because I felt like, I have not up till now felt like it was maybe something that I had or was dealing with until I mean, although I did have the experience of working with everyone and everyone talking about it backstage and through the process and through the show, and kind of sitting there going like, okay, yeah, a lot of this makes sense. A lot of this makes sense, huh? But yeah, so it is very like, even if, I mean, it is a lot of what we talk about in the show is that process to diagnosis, and that process to people sort of discovering that in themselves. And it's very long and very difficult from what I have learned, but it is, I think, very, whether you do or you don't have ADHD, whether I do or I don't, TBD. But it's very, it is very like, I think the experience of it, within, and I think definitely to hear people who saw it without is very illuminating, I think. It makes it a lot less like mystical and nebulous, I think.
If I may, because we put those notebooks on the chairs, I actually saved a few
Oh.
I found particularly touching. So one says, all plays should have notebooks. I am so entertained, and it hasn't been started yet. Drawing of a lady in an ice cube.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Easiest way to make theater, just let them entertain themselves.
On the back, thank you for sharing that with me. If there's anything I can do to support you better, just let me know. Goldfish can't hear you underwater, dash, a real conversation I had. And this is the last one I'll share because I just love it. I think it's something in the play like sparked someone to get something out of their system. My friend Kyle keeps calling me constantly. I'm worried at first, but when he opens his mouth and says Piggly Wiggly, that feeling dissipates. I wish he would stop calling me when I'm on dates, though. Laura is entertained, but still, dot dot dot. Kyle, if you're out there, just know that you'll never collect on the life insurance policy you signed me up for. See you on the farm, Porky. I just think, like, yeah, whatever that was like helping that person deal with, I'm so happy to have been a part of that. And then
Have to get that to
drawing
Kyle.
him and Laura and Kyle on the farm, and Kyle on the farm.
Oh, Drew Kyle is a
That's
banger.
amazing. Oh
Wow, that's
man.
very precious to me.
Oh, I feel like we have to say too, kids start, parents started bringing their kids. They're
Yeah,
not the first
that's true.
to come see the show. And there was something about that that from my heart, I was just like, oh.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine being a kid feeling like you don't fit and then being able to see a bunch of adults be like, nah, man, this is my brain's like your brain.
I was
It
that
never gets better. But
club.
we're just different. There's no like better or
Yeah.
wrong. It's just a different way of looking at the world, and it can be so beautiful in its own way. And that for me, that was like, oh, tiny, like little girls were coming, little boys, and you know, like, oh, so nice.
There
So wrong.
was one where like it was the there was the kid that sat in the front row, and then I think did we bring the kid up for the Oh, we brought the kid up for the shame pit and had him
Yes.
spell the shame
Yeah.
with us and do the like okay that was bad but you're not bad with us and it was just this kid that like everything that was happening he was like turning to his mom and being like that's me that's me it was incredible to see
think we also had a kid who was a legit World War II tank fan or something,
we
and
had we did have a tank
Oh,
at one point and he As when in the part, there's a part of the show where I have just gone completely off the rails and I have not done anything I was supposed to do because I went down a rabbit hole about tanks. And there's a part where I go into the audience and I start telling people as much as I managed to learn on Wikipedia about World War II tanks. And this kid is like, over here, talk to me about this. I was just like, I think my character's out of the show for the rest of this. I think he's just gonna hang out next to this kid and act like learn about tanks, deep dive.
I was teching for the half the show, so I was watching from the booth. I also saw this interaction happen, and as soon as John opens his mouth about the Panzerkampfwagen Mark III or whatever it is, this guy and I think his partner just like look at each other, just like it wasn't just like sorry, big terrible for podcast, big like gaping mouth, just like so shocked. It wasn't just like he's into tanks, like the guy fucking loves tanks, but like, he was literally looking up German World War II tanks that morning and they talked about it. It was just like, oh,
That's my tag. That's the tag I just read about.
I think I said in the questions you had sent me as well, but from that same vantage point, you could see some interactions, and there was this like I think 12-year-old and his mom watching, and sort of similarly just kind of kept looking at each other, both just so delighted. It was so sweet, and they came up to me after and were just telling me that they both I think they both have ADHD, and they were just kind of like, oh, I get why you do that thing, or maybe just the boy, I can't remember, but the point is that they were just like so clear, they felt so seen, and it was so beautiful to see that actual like forge their bond. Like they even I have a newborn, and you know my yes, Chloe
How's
is
your
clapping.
dad?
And it's interesting, like navigating challenges with my partner that like I'm so glad I got diagnosed a couple years ago, just because at least we have a framework when I like forget to do something important or like aren't prioritizing that thing that really ought to. There's a room, there's a framework where it's not just me being an asshole. It's like, it's also like, oh, my brain just doesn't do that. You have to be very explicit if you want this thing that may be obvious to other people. Like, oh, when I leave the house, you have to take care of the baby. Right. I can't just leave the house when I want or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's so integral to know that there's this, just like this neurodivergence, this like difference that doesn't always have the same. Like the intentions we would apply to somebody who follows the same behavior don't necessarily fit very well.
Yeah, for me, it was so nice to see the little girls coming out. Not that gender's a construct, so who knows who actually identifies as what. But Because diagnoses for women with ADHD is a new thing. It's new. It wasn't an option when we were kids. Like my brother was diagnosed with ADHD, but for me, it was just, I was just lazy. So that really meant something to me to be like, okay, things are changing, and little female identifying brains get to be seen too as well. So
Absolutely.
yeah. And on that note, incorporating the like kids into the shame pit thing, or just even introducing shame, in my opinion, is a very useless thing. Guilt can teach you about your values and how to interact better with the world, but shame is just an identifier that you don't need to walk around with forever if you're doing the work on yourself. And so teaching them about how like this emotion occurs, it's actually quite safe so long as you're very responsible with it and understand, okay, that was bad, but you're not bad. That's the point. Shame isn't who you are now. It's just something you did. And I think I had a very emotional moment backstage when I realized that that's what we were communicating. And I really appreciated that part too.
Yeah.
That was very wise, Chloe.
Yeah.
Thank you, Danny. I've been rehearsing for this interview all
She's got a teleprompter over there.
Crazy that we're all doing the lines you wrote, Chloe. Like, really good prediction.
Yeah, fuck you. See? My elaborate plan
That
all
was
along.
right. She wrote me saying that was very wise, too.
The show is coming back as part of Toronto Sketch Fest in March. Are you excited to revisit it? And are there any changes we can expect to see or evolutions?
I'm going to change most things
Absolutely.
once we're on stage.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
We know of any changes?
We haven't sat down with it yet.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out, man. I don't know. No, it'll be in a new space. I don't think, because it's a one night show, like there are things I would like to do in a rematch. Like I have this idea, like to mix the physicality with the chart, apply to the labyrinth, and then can make a more like visual maze kind of thing, which I think would be super fun.
I like that.
But because it's a one night show, it just like the it doesn't make sense to like revamp the whole show for a one off. So it's more or less saying we may trim a few minutes just to fit into our slots kind of thing.
Right.
But
Here's a question. Do
it's
you still have the flip chart?
yeah.
Okay.
No, it's
I like
taken
this.
some bruises, but for one show, some tape will hold it together.
Let's just turn this into a production meeting, actually.
I think it is. I actually
Before you get
genuinely
to
the
that,
only way to get us all in the same Zoom meeting.
I'll say I'm quite excited to bring it to Sketch Fest. I've been around Sketch Fest a lot. I've done it a lot, and I really like it. And I just think like even working on the show this year, even working with other people again, let alone these people, my God, like it's just been such a wonderful departure from so much of what I usually do or get to do. And I'm particularly excited to bring this show into the kind of Sketchfest space and to see people in that community who haven't seen it yet get to see it. I think it's gonna be really, I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it. I think people are really gonna enjoy it. I think it's
I
gonna be
also
fun.
think it'll be fun too, because I feel like this show is gonna have like, a 100% success rate in terms of diagnosing every single member of the audience. And a bunch of comedians
Probably,
and stuff, they're gonna be like, everyone who doesn't have the diagnosis will be like, oh fuck,
Put one under everyone's chair like
It's, there's a joking, I have a we have a joking tagline in our like event descriptions that like, it's the only show guaranteed to give you ADHD. It might be
Oprah.
kind of true, because you might have to go like, oh wait, I should get a diagnosis.
So Sketchfest is also going to include a solo set by John Blair. Does anybody else have anything to plug?
Oh, yes. Whoops. But it's not with Sketchfest. Is that okay? Am I allowed
Yeah,
to?
just in general. You want to shout out your socials, do whatever. This is your moment.
I got a residency with Replay Storytelling to do a 1 hour storytelling comedy special. It goes up on March 1st. It's called Don't Feed the Vultures, and it is about my journey with my ADHD diagnosis. So,
Wow,
yeah.
Julie, can't wait.
Topical. Yeah. Yes. So,
I have an
you should
event that
write
I run that has nothing to do with theater.
That's
Go
not
for
true.
true.
December.
I run a Dungeons and Dragons event at the bar that I run called Dungeons and Flagons. That happens monthly at the Alpine, where we run one shots. Yeah, you're right. It's most of the people that I
It's
get to DM
improv.
are like Alec has DM'd for it. Sean Murray from Sexy Rex has DM'd for it. It's all very theatrically minded people that are running these games, which is sort of what we focus on with them is like it's like the performance aspect of D&D. Mainly from the DM's side of things, but yeah. Anyways, we run D&D one shots out of the basement at the Alpine. It's called Dungeons and Flagons. The best way to follow us is on Instagram, Dungeons and Flagons TO. We do one shots, and then we also do campaigns, and then we also just do other Dungeons and Dragons related things. That's kind of the big thing that I've been organizing for the past 2 years.
Anybody else before my last question? No, no plugging. Okay. Does anyone have anything they would like to add?
I just want to say, Jillian, your hair looks great.
It
Thank
does. Thanks.
Yeah, looks really
Which
good.
shampoos? Chloe, that's really sweet of you, Chloe, to script that for Danny. I wouldn't at all.
Yes. Chloe.
Anytime.
Whole thing was written by Second City.
Yes, it was a collaborative effort. It came out of process.
I sent it out saying a mandatory opportunity.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything big to add. There was one thing that I think is interesting to share. You had asked in my individual thing, like, oh, how does my work as a therapist influence things? And one thing I didn't get into was like, ah, oh, it's going to take too long to explain. But now I can speak with my words, which is there's this. So in like psychotherapy, there's this like the research like prioritizes treatments that are really effective. So like something that if you go through it's going to have a really big impact. So like the basically somebody's symptoms say would reduce by a large amount. So that looks really good. That's very powerful. And it is great. But the downside of those approaches is that like they usually take a lot of sessions, a lot of like resources, and this will come back to play, I promise. The short version of it is basically like we will never have enough resources in the world. It's just not fundamentally possible. I love explaining this to the sound of Danny eating a hammer. And that's the play, folks. That's the play.
I don't know how you guys have your Zoom set up, but it actively cut away
Yeah,
It's a chicken shawarma. It's a shawarma.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Anyway,
Oh
so there'll never be
my
enough like therapists, whether it's individual or group or whatever, to like provide services for all the mental health needs in the world. So we also have to look at these things that are like broad scale interventions that don't maybe do much on their own individually, but because you can scale them, they can actually have a public impact. An example they give is like doctors in the States started to tell people that like their patients like, hey, as your doctor, I recommend you quit smoking. That doesn't do much, but there was like a 3% reduction in smoking rates when they introduced that policy across a huge population. That's a ton. All of this to say that I think that's part of why I love making this play and sharing this play. It's like it's not therapy, but it is therapeutic. And I think like especially in the arts, you can question like, why do I do this silly thing? Like, why am I, I don't know, walking out doing a solo show with a horse head kind of thing or whatever it's bullshit you're doing. But it's like it has a real impact. Like it genuinely has a real impact. And I feel like things like this can actually, when scaled, when spread out, particularly a show like this, like actually they're not just fun and they're not just like even just meaningful, which is great, but like it's like a public health intervention. It's like actually has like a little thing to it that I think is I don't know. I just find that really fascinating. I feel like there's a a greater marriage between those parts of my life than it seems sometimes.
I can't believe I wrote that.
That was beautiful,
Yeah, wow, you did a lot of research.
And on
Great,
that
Lizzie, I gotta
note,
take
I'm going
notes on
to
this.
wrap up. Thank you all so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And it was a great
Kelly.
show. Congratulations.
So that's it for our interview with the cast of 13 Plays About ADHD all at the same time. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts so that you can hear all of the audio versions of our nominee interview series, as well as all of the other continuing series we have going on up there. MyEntertainmentWorld.ca is the website. There you can read all of the print versions of the nominee interview series, as well as our usual coverage. And follow My Ant World on Twitter and Instagram, My Entertainment World on Facebook, YouTube, and Pinterest for everything else that we have going on. Thanks so much for tuning in.